today's guest is doing something, building something that is really big. Like, I think this is change the world big. And I mean, what am I saying? Every guest that we've had is doing something that's changing the world. I don't want to sound really dramatic, but when I first heard about this idea and this concept of what this person today is building, my mind is blown because it is so powerful in the sustainability world. There's really nothing like it that I know of that exists. And that's why it's so fun to have a podcast that is called The Next Big Thing, because every single guest we have on, I'm like, oh my God, this is the next big thing. Like, the next big thing is talking about and really modernizing how we talk about sustainability, making sure that we have checks and balances in place for sustainability. How many times have you gone to a website to learn about a brand sustainability practices, and it just feels like you're reading jargon, or someone who is a marketing copywriter wrote it, but you have no idea what it actually means? Like, that happens all the time because so many brands know that it's important for consumers to see that they're being quote unquote sustainable. And so they mold and shape the conversation in a way that suits them, that also makes it sound like they're doing the right thing, so you feel more encouraged to shop them. And it's an ongoing problem. And I think it's becoming more and more prevalent as Gen Z rises to the ranks and has more buying power. And these brands realize that they need to start market to them a little bit more, right? When you think about all of these new generations that come up, you really look at boomers, you're like, well, they have so much buying power. But really, Gen Z has the power to decide with their wallet where they're shopping, what they're going to be doing, who they're going to be supporting. Like, it's a big deal. And so for these brands, there's really no checks and balances that they have to put their sustainability communication through. So they just kind of say, hey, we're sustainable, or hey, we're paying fair wages, or we are reducing our carbon footprint. Like, what do those things actually mean? And brands need to start being held accountable for these things. Like, we don't hold brands accountable at most. We kind of just say, like, hey, they're messaging it. Maybe that's a start. But I think we should have higher expectations for brands, government entities, countries, like literally everyone, humans. So today on the podcast, we have Tamara, who is a recent Emmy Award winner. Congrats, Tamara. Such a huge accomplishment. Tamara has so much experience in journalism. She was a broadcast journalist on the news. She's done investigative journalism. She's covered foreign policies. Like, she has done it all. She knows so much about getting to the heart of what needs to happen to move forward and move stories forward. And sustainability has been a big focus of her career. And she's built something that really just blows my mind. I mean, I know I keep saying that. I hate to sound super dramatic, but it is something that we as a world, as multiple industries, need to have in our back pocket. Like, nothing has existed like this before. And when you listen to this episode, I think you're going to be so inspired to realize that you can build something like this too. You can start something like this if you see that something's not being done. Like, you have the power. Sorry, my voice cracked a little bit. I just get really excited. But you have the power to build these things. And it's just so cool that Tamara's story, once again, is not the typical, is an atypical quote-unquote founder story. And I say quote-unquote because it's really become the most typical story ever of she was doing something that she thought she was going to be doing for a while and then completely reversed and did something else. Like, so I hope for anyone listening, whatever you are dreaming up about your life, whatever you're excited about, just know that life can take you in the most beautiful directions. And Tamara is a true testament of that. And I'm so excited for you guys to hear her episode. I'll stop blabbing now. But thank you so much, Tamara, for coming on the podcast and talking about this, because you are changing the world and it's so exciting to see. So enjoy this episode and I'll catch you guys on the flip side. Okay, so let's talk about from the very beginning of, like, let's go back to your high school, since we were just talking about high school. What did you always think that you were going to be when you grew up?
I was a ballerina.
No, really?
Yeah. Yes. So, I mean, not from a very young age. I actually had an unconventional ballerina journey. But in high school, I was very big into dance, like everybody, you know, like a lot of young girls are. So I was doing all those things like modern dance, hip hop and things like that and competing. And I was having a great time. And then I got accepted into a dance company called Fusion Dance Company. And they had some ballet masters from Austria. And so I started working with them. And after graduation, went to go dance in Europe and do operas in Europe. And it was so much fun. And then I came back to the U.S. and I went to New York and I started auditioning. And then I went, you know, back to Seattle and choreographed for dance companies and musical theater. And that led me back to New York.
I did not know this about you.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
Yeah. So I actually started my career in New York, trying to be in musical theater on Broadway.
Wow. And what was that like for you?
So much fun, except for the fact that I genuinely hate singing in front of people.
I mean, why did you have to? Oh, because you had to do like the dance and the singing. Really.
Yeah. To be on Broadway. And so, you know, I love the dancing part of it. And I hated the singing part of it. Whenever it would come to the singing part of the audition, like I would just roll over in absolute pain. You know, like I couldn't do, I would no matter what, screw up the song. It could be the easiest song and my voice would crack. And so I just never got past. I did some off-Broadway stuff, but I just never got past. I was actually in like the final call for Beauty and the Beast. This was years ago on Broadway. I was like the final call for to be the maid in Beauty and the Beast. And it got between me and the dance captain of Oklahoma at the time. And like, she could sing like nobody's business. And I just like, I didn't do it.
You're like, I'm out of here. This is not for me. Okay. So then what happened after that?
I questioned my whole existence and found myself sitting on a park bench in Midtown Manhattan and ran into a friend of mine who said, you should get into film. Because they had left theater and went into film doing documentaries and they helped me get an internship at a company called Stick Figure Productions. And I got into film and documentaries and I loved it. And that was my path into journalism and filmmaking and now where I'm at. It was just the best decision, the best opportunity.
So when you were making that kind of decision, were you just like, I need to find another job, so I might as well just take this? Or were you like, I think I might have a genuine interest in this, I might as well try it?
I had no idea. I had no idea what I was doing. I was just like lost in New York. I don't know if other people have, you know, I do know that other people have had this experience. New York can be an overwhelming experience when you're young. It's like the best place with the most energy in the world. And then, you know, you'll have moments of crisis of just like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I have no idea what my direction is. I am lost in the millions of people that are surrounding me. And so I didn't know. And I just figured I needed to keep forward momentum. And so I did it. And it was such a great opportunity. And at the time, I mean, because I, again, an unconventional path, I had dropped out of college. I had to go dance in Europe. So I didn't have a degree yet. I didn't know what those next steps were. And I ended up right after I started doing documentaries, I was like, oh my gosh, I need to know more. And so I ended up going back to school and then getting my master's from there.
Interesting. Know more in what sense? Just like know more about the world or?
I feel like at the beginning, when I started, it was like know more about everything. Know more about like filmmaking. And I originally got into the New School for filmmaking. And then I went, well, I'm already learning filmmaking from my internships and from my jobs. So I want to learn, I'm doing documentaries. I want to learn the policy behind it. I want to be able to ask the questions. I want to be, you know, I want to understand how this world works, how the policy works, how, you know, infrastructure and business runs.
Wow.
And so I switched my focus to global affairs as opposed to film.
I mean, for people listening, they're probably like, okay, so Broadway dancer and singer, even like reluctant singer to then doing this. Unbelievable. What was the project that you worked on there that just flipped a switch for you?
I did a documentary that ended up going on HBO called No One Dies in Lilydale. And it was like, it was a film that was done upstate New York at this community of mediums. And it was so interesting. But from that, because I was a, you know, it was, the documentary was great. And the documentary experience was so exciting, I decided to do my own documentary. So I dug into, and this documentary isn't done yet, like the documentary that will end 10 years in the making. But it was, I ran into a group of indigenous students in Durango who were working to keep their education rights. And while working on that, I discovered that I didn't know enough about policy. I didn't know, and so I was sitting down with, you know, legal scholars and heads of state asking questions, and I just purely did not know enough. And I needed to dive in. I needed to teach myself not only how to learn this stuff. I mean, that's like what a lot of, you know, law school is about, is teaching yourself how to learn and then dissect arguments. So I need to learn that, but then I needed to learn how to argue it myself. So that's why I went back and decided, okay, I need to know policy, I need to know international affairs, I need to know business, and I still take classes.
It's amazing. And how was it when you're talking to people? You know, obviously I started journalism in college and I just feel like we've always clicked, but probably because of that shared passion for just storytelling and understanding other people's stories. But it's really hard with journalism, especially nowadays, to have the transparency factor and not let your own bias seep in. Did you feel like a lot of the stories that you were telling shaped your current beliefs?
100%. I mean, it's hard not to when you do investigative journalism or investigative documentaries, anything where you're kind of digging beneath the surface level and seeing kind of how, what's the right way to explain this? When you see how things can be skewed or how unfair things are to people, it's hard not to bring in, you know, kind of your own personal beliefs or, you know, or start to believe a certain way. And that's, as a journalist, you're trained to fight against that, right? You're trained just even in structure to make sure that no matter what, you're getting alternative views.
Right.
So luckily that's, you know, something, but it's definitely hard. And I mean, now I can safely say I've moved myself into a position where I do work that aligns strictly with my beliefs.
Yeah. It's hard. I don't think everyone has that. Maybe it is a privilege, probably is a privilege, you know, to be able to work on things that are fully aligned with what you believe in. So after you got your master's, what happened after that?
So, well, I was working full time and going to school. Again,
crazy.
So,
person.
I mean, like, yeah. And so I was getting my master's at night while working at Fox wow. Broadcast News during the day.
And did so you ever sleep? No. That's amazing. I could not do that. How did you do that?
You just do, right? Again, I really wanted my master's. I was so proud of it. It was something I was doing myself. I was paying for it myself. So I was working to pay for my master's. And there were some points that was very funny because, you know, you're thinking I'm working in New York in the number one market. Like, you know, I've made it to a point in my career where you don't necessarily need that degree in order to get the job that you want. But mm-hmm. I really believed in the educational value of what I was gaining. And so I wanted it. I wanted it badly. And so I didn't necessarily get the grades that you would, you know, I graduated with honors, but like at that point of like, what, like a 3.5, you know, like it wasn't.
Still good. That's great.
It is still great. And it's still something to be proud of. But you know, I had times, and luckily I had good professors who knew, you know, how much time I was spending, you know, working, breaking news and doing investigations, that they were kind with me sometimes. Not all.
Okay. So how did this like broadcast news happen then? So we're going from documentaries to broadcast, like broadcast news. What was that like?
I am lucky. Pure luck. I was brought in to be a part of a program that was kind of a TMZ style show for broadcast news. And so, I mean, if I had gone the traditional news route, I probably would never have been on air, but I actually went in to apply for this show as a camera person because
wow.
I've been doing, because I had been doing documentaries. So I'd been running around, you know, the US with a camera, learning how to shoot and edit and do all those things. And so I applied for this show on Fox to be a camera person. And when I met the team, they said I needed to audition to be an on-camera person because they were looking for different types of viewpoints, right? So I did. I came in and I auditioned with a group of really incredibly talented, you know, people from all kind of spectrums of broadcast news or of news, and even some people who had never been on the news before who went on to have incredible careers. And we got selected for this show, which, like I said, it was very TMZ style news. And so much fun. I mean, I had times where I was smacking my head up against the wall thinking, what am I doing? And I look back and I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, like it was such an incredible experience.
How did you train to be in front of the camera like that?
It was literally like happening so fast. I had to do it. Right. So there was no training. It was just like, and I think I still, like, even like 3 years in, was gaining tips on ways to do things, right? Like we were supposed to do it very natural, off the cuff, talking to the camera. And then when I had to start doing packages, like, that was a whole new thing to me, right? So, it was definitely like there was always something that I was constantly learning while I was doing it.
It's really amazing because you think about most broadcast journalists, it's so competitive to even get a job in let alone the number one city in the country, but like, it's so competitive to get a job in some of these like smaller markets, right? Mm-hmm. When you are already a trained professional. So that's unbelievable to think you got this opportunity and you had to kind of like change from being behind the camera to in front of the camera quickly.
Yeah. Well, but I grabbed hold of it and I ran with it, right? Yeah. Like I didn't think, oh my God. I mean, I would work 12, 14 hour days. There was days that I, you know, was up at 6 a.m. in the morning and I was still like live tweeting people who were watching the show at 1 a.m.
Wow.
Right? Like I just knew what an incredible opportunity it was, and get headaches, growing pains.
Yeah, right. So totally. So you're doing TMZ style news. Were you telling the stories that you wanted to tell, or was there ever kind of like a nagging feeling that it was what you wanted to do or was what you didn't want to do?
Oh my gosh. So I would say probably 20% of the stories that I did, maybe 30, were like stories that I was so thrilled to be able to do. Mm. Right. And then the rest, I used to joke around that if it was on the New York Post, if it was on the cover of the New York Post, that I would be chasing it that day. And like the New York Post would post things like, cat missing for 10 years, you know, like owner still looking for cat that's been missing for 10 years.
You're like, this is hot. It's a hot story. We got to get it.
I kid you not. I would find myself. And I mean, like, again, this is going on TV. I would find myself in Brooklyn. I this one story in particular was, I mean, I'm talking to a legitimate story that I did that went on air. This, and it was in the New York Post. A woman had been looking for a cat for 10 years and like posted like another like wanted sign for it, right? Or missing sign. So I went out and I printed all these missing signs.
Wanted sign.
But okay. I printed out all these signs and I went to Brooklyn to, it was like Crown Heights where this happened. And I stood on the corner with my camera on and every person who passed by, have you seen this cat? Have you seen this cat?
Oh my God.
And I knocked on doors and I looked around and like, and you know, the woman didn't even comment for the story, but the package was so funny that they put it on here.
That's amazing.
So, but I mean, so that's a funny story, but I also like really, you know, I did some really incredible work where like, you know, I helped tenants who, you know, like senior citizen tenants who were getting kicked out of their apartments by a landlord that was breaking the law. I, you know, I went up toe to toe with, you know, their landlords who were doing things incorrectly. And I changed a privacy law in New Jersey. And, you know, like I uncovered environmental contamination in different areas. You know, like there's work that I did that I am really proud of.
Yeah. So exactly what you just said, I kind of want to tether that to what you're currently working on right now, because that is, there are parallels, not the cat story maybe, but I don't know, maybe there could be, but more of the sustainability piece, which is obviously something that you're incredibly passionate about. How did these beginning pieces of your career really help shape what you're currently working on right now? And how did that just nudge you in this direction?
Yeah, so I mean, since that first documentary that I said like still isn't complete, where I started working with the indigenous students in Colorado, looking at the environment and seeing kind of how business and policy play with our environment and who makes the decisions on that has led me to where I am now. So since then, I started doing investigative stories and just stories in general, not only on environmental, you know, contamination or policies, but also on impact investing and, you know, businesses and the business of sustainability. And so for over 10 now, probably 12 years, I've been doing that. So going from investigative reporting to then impact investing and financial news, dealing with sustainability and ESG, and now to working with mission-driven brands on communication strategy for ESG, and then launching my own company called Systems Changer, where I've got three other co-founders, and we're doing a community think tank that is at the intersection of transformative leadership and implementing ESG and SDG goals.
And for people listening, what is ESG and SDG?
ESG is environmental, social, and governance. Their policies and frameworks for better companies to put into implement into their company so that they run businesses that really help shape society in a better way. And SDG is the Sustainable Development Goal set by the UN that we hope to meet in order to make the planet a more equitable, healthy, and safe place for society.
Interesting. It's cool. And yeah. And what do you think about how the sustainability space is evolving right now, especially when it comes to brands?
It's so popular, but you know, it is popular. It is such a great word to use and every brand wants to use it, but it is incredibly difficult to measure, to implement, and to communicate, right? Mm. So that's, you know, and it's also usually in companies, no matter what company, it's understaffed. So
it's kind of like a checkbox, right? Like a check the box brands that are doing it. Really, when you think about sustainability 12 years ago, that was a very new conversation at the time.
Yeah, exactly. And now it's very popular. And I would say, you know, younger adults, younger people, they really want companies to do better. And so that's why companies are striving to, but yet most don't know how to even start or how to implement or how to measure it, right?
Right.
And it's extremely difficult. That's why this has been a conversation for so long. But we have to start doing it. We have to start enforcing it. That's the only way to do it.
What makes it difficult?
Well, think about measuring sustainability. So first it's like, okay, how is your company sustainable? Well, there's so many ways to be sustainable. You could reduce your water usage, or you could reduce your carbon usage, or you could try and offset your carbon, right? By planting trees somewhere. But can you do all of those at the same time? Or does your business call for doing all of those at the same time? You could try and reduce your transportation emissions or even how you transport things from A to B to consumer, right? So, you could try and have manufacturing facilities closer to where the consumers are consuming things. But again, how difficult is that if you've been manufacturing in China for 40
right.
years? And so sustainability and doing better business is really different for everybody, but so there's no way to like across the board be like, all right, well, we want every business to reduce their carbon footprint, because what does that also look like for a community like us? Right. So if we're an online virtual community, how do we reduce our carbon footprint? Mm. We don't have one yet.
Right? Yeah.
But what we can do as a company is we can all try and reduce our water usage, or we can all, there's all sorts of things. And I'm really just using kind of like low-hanging fruit, really. Some of the people that we talk to, they're using IoT to measure what their companies are doing. So like Internet of Things. So
yep.
Sensors, right? Sensors to measure like, hey, is your company, that you can put a sensor on your recycling bin and gauge how much recycling you're doing versus waste. Daily, annually, things like that. And so you can track that using sensors and really like, you know, hone in on what your company is doing, how much electricity you're using. And also that could also track things for like the S of the ESG, which is like, are your your employees? Is your team utilizing the break room? Are they taking breaks? Things like that that we also need to think about with, making sure that we're also treating people right as companies.
And yes, that's so, a huge, huge thing that a lot of companies are not paying attention to because they're so busy thinking about just the like external environmental factors.
Yep. Yep. And so that's really, and that's why I say it's so complicated is I've just rattled off a few things and it really is, you need to get into the weeds with this.
Right. And what would you say for brands who feel maybe overwhelmed by, I mean, there's cancel culture is such a big thing right now because so many brands are getting called out for things that they're not doing the way that they should be. And either they're greenwashing, which basically means they're fluffing up what they're doing to make it seem like they're doing a lot of stuff. But to your point, it's really hard to say we're 100% sustainable. You know, almost every brand is going to have some gaps somewhere. So how does a brand even think about prioritizing what that could look like for them? And then even communicating that to customers so they're not getting called out by customers for what they're not doing.
It's so hard. I actually just did a panel for the Diligent conference called Reputational Risk. Are we being canceled? And this was
interesting.
The topic. Yeah. And we think about, so if we look at case studies of like companies that are trying to do well, so you look at Tom's, right, who tried to do well, and then like it went totally awry in practice. It's hard to do something good and to not have maybe repercussions on something. So the best thing I would say, I hope this is answering your question because I did start to rattle off there about case studies, but as a company, what you should do from your foundation is set what your mission is. And in your mission is what you want to accomplish and do well. And then the other things, like you should have kind of sidebars of things that you know that you're not going to concentrate on, but you're aware of, right? So that you know what you're trying to accomplish and what the kind of the cascading effects of that could be. So if you are aware that you are trying to reduce water and that is your goal, then you need to do that well. And you need to understand that what you're not doing is planting trees, right? Maybe a terrible example. So that when someone comes, when you maybe post something about like, oh, it's terrible that this is happening and people come after you, you can say, well, that's not what we're trying to accomplish right now. We can only accomplish this and we are trying to accomplish this. But we are supporting anyone who tries to accomplish, this other sidebar. But if you don't try and make that clear, you have to make it clear visually. You have to make it clear on your website. You have to make it clear in everything that you do, what you're trying to accomplish. If you don't do that, then cancel culture will probably come after and get you, right? If you claim that you're a company that is proud of diversity, but you have no pictures on your site or anything that do that,
like literally practicing what you preach.
Then don't step into the fray when there's a social justice issue because you have not proven that you actually stand for that.
Right. Yeah. So you have to have almost some supporting points to show that you're focused on one thing. But what about, let's say you make a list of everything that you want to work on for the next 5 years as a company, and maybe you're working on one thing, you're focusing on one initiative in 1 year. For the other initiatives that are happening afterwards, do you communicate those to your customers or do you just kind of tell them, hey, we're focusing on this one thing? Or do you say, hey, here's our roadmap and our plan? Like, how do you, like, if a customer is calling you out for not doing something that's not your focus, do you like talk about that, communicate that?
Yeah. I mean, I would definitely communicate it. I wouldn't, I probably wouldn't put anything in writing on something that you're going to focus on 5-10 years down the road, right? Because you're going to be held accountable for that. And if you're not, if you've got it on your website, if you've got it on writing, then it should be a focus of yours, right? Like we don't want people who are dreaming about things. We want people that are doing things.
Yeah.
So that would be one thing. But that's why, I mean, I guess at Systems Changer, that's why we talk about systems, because we shouldn't expect any one company or any one initiative to accomplish everything.
Right.
We should expect them to be a part of systems that do.
Interesting. And do you feel like there is a difference between what brands can achieve versus what the customer's expectations are? Like, because I think a lot of people too think that brands can and should do everything. So it, like, how do you, is there some convincing that needs to happen from a customer standpoint to say, like, you know, like we were talking about earlier, you really are focusing on one thing. Like, I almost feel like there's this other side of it that needs to evolve too, because people are calling things like brands out for things and they might be doing some other things really, really well. Right. But it's like, they are not perfect.
Yeah. 100%. I do agree with that. Like, one thing I should say is I agree that consumers should speak their mind and demand the most out of their brands.
Hmm.
Right? Like, if consumers don't speak up and you don't put your money, I believe that the way you shop is the way you should invest. You put your money where your values are.
Yes. So you vote with your wallet, right? Like,
100%.
I say that all the time. Yeah.
And so I expect consumers to be speaking up, but I don't think that they should condemn brands that, you know, maybe are trying, but like screwed up and come out and admit they screwed up, right? Like, we could call out some other brands right now that are global entities that are not doing good things and aren't coming out and saying, hey, we screwed up. Those brands need to be called out, and I believe action should be taken. But if a brand comes out and they are sincere about something, like, they need to learn. They need to grow. And if they're genuinely trying, then great. They shouldn't be totally canceled. They also
only 50%. No,
but brands, you know, brands are led by CEOs, which are humans, yes. And they don't know what their consumers want unless their consumers tell them.
Yes.
So,
and it's funny because a lot of customers and consumers assume that brands are maybe hiding things or that they aren't aware. And when you're on the corporate side of things, like you've been on the corporate side, I've been on the corporate side, you really just don't know sometimes. Like, you have no idea. So that even, I think, shows a collective movement internally with brands where you're staying closely tapped into social media conversations, right? And you're funneling that in a way that can actually be actionable for the executive team. So I feel like too, a lot of people at, you know, maybe a lower level at a company are seeing these things, but it's also internally not getting surfaced. So it's almost like as a brand, you really need to make sure that, like, holistically you're looking out for those things and you're anticipating that those conversations are happening. So there's onus on the brand side and then also on the consumer side.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, look, do I want perfection? 100%. Like, strive for it. But
yeah.
I think in these moments of like, okay, someone, you know, someone is grappling with a situation and trying to figure it out. Let's wait and see how they figure it out.
Yeah. I want to talk about what you're building in a second, but I do have one other question for you that I think is a question that a lot of people who are building brands think about, especially newer brands who really do want to do things right. What is the true difference between a brand that is greenwashing? Like, how can you really tell if a brand is greenwashing and trying to make it seem like they're doing the right thing versus they are? Like, how can you really tell the difference? And how can a brand make sure that they're communicating that effectively so it doesn't seem like it's greenwashing?
I think that's a great question. I don't necessarily have the like silver bullet of a great answer, but I think if a brand is actually tracking and using a framework to measure what they're trying to achieve, that's a good start to see if they're actually genuine, right?
Like, so the actual impact that they're having as a result of their initiatives.
Yeah. Tracking impact, tracking, monitoring what they're doing, right? Mm. So like, again, I won't name names, but like, I've been curious this whole time. There's a fashion company that uses recycled bottles, right? I'm curious how many bottles that they've actually, you know, recycled.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're tracking that. And that's just a sheer curiosity of mine.
That's interesting. So it's almost like you say that you're doing it, but then do you have like maybe almost like a real time ticker that can showcase that, or some added like tech that you can plug in maybe to your website or something that you're doing that like really shows that you're walking the walk.
Exactly. Because I mean, and I'm trying to think of, you know, especially at the startup level, you know, you don't have teams doing this, right? You usually have a founder and someone else. And, and so
right,
like, if you're actually serious about it, what system is in place to track it? And are they being transparent with that data on a regular basis? You know, like, I'd be curious to see it on websites. I did a informal LinkedIn poll a while ago on how consumers got their sustainability, their ESG information from companies. Like, was it through the news? Was it from their website? Was it from a reporting site, like agency or other? And the main one that people said was through their websites.
Mm-hmm.
And so if the information's not on their website, then where do you find this information?
Interesting. Or if it's like really soft marketing language, right? Where it's like some companies are like, well, we reduce emissions. It's like, what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
It's like, okay.
Are you a trucking company?
Yeah. Like, what are you? Like, what is going on? Yeah. Or a lot of times they just assume that the consumer is not that smart. They are actually a lot smarter than they are giving credit for. So let's talk about what you're currently building. I mean, it's built, right? Because it's launching what? Like next
beta.
Week?
Yes. Launching beta next week. Couldn't be more excited. So I am a co-founder of a company called Systems Changer. It's a curated community think tank. Like I said, we're at the intersection of transformative leadership and implementing ESG and SDG goals. And so basically what we are is we're a curated community, a digital hub where people who are transformative leaders who are interested in frameworks and tips, tools, for implementing ESG and SDG goals, they can go to and be a part of a greater network to not only get ideas, get tools, but also be a part of events and networking. And that's the kind of curated community aspect of our community. But we're more than that. So we're a think tank. So through our community, we're going to be utilizing our editorial team, which we have built out, to forward thinking on systems change. So like I mentioned before, we believe that there's a lot of businesses that are trying to do well, but you can't do that alone. You have to do that as a part of a system. And so many of these things happen in silos. And so we want to bring those silos together and then amplify the work that's being done. So through our editorial team, we're going to be putting out analysis and thought leadership and reports to help leaders further what they're working on, as well as just in the greater, like you said, the greater knowledge of consumers and of society, like what needs to happen to accomplish this. So what is happening? What are businesses doing? What can they do? And the forecast of getting there. So like
Amazing.
A think tank. Yeah.
Amazing. So when you say leaders, what kind of leaders are you looking for?
So we have a variety of leaders. So we have people who have already expressed interest. So we haven't opened up the floodgates to enter our community until 11/1. But we have a group that has already come and expressed interest. So we've got kind of this like waiting room, I guess you would say, that's about to come in. And the people who have expressed interest and want to join our community are a variety, from entrepreneurs working in this space, to consultants, to people in PR and communications, to CEOs of Fortune 100s.
Wow.
We have policymakers. We have people who work for the UN, as well as work for state government and city municipalities, who are all interested in what needs to happen to make this process actually work, right? How do we come to solid answers on this? We have spaces for working groups that we're building out so that we can bring people from all these different sectors together to talk about things. So I'll give you this is not one that we're working at the moment, but one that we talk about a lot. So when we talk about creating a framework for what are the frameworks for ESG for investors? So what measurements should we be looking at in order to claim that a company is meeting ESG goals, right? There are none right now.
That's insane.
Well, but there's no, sorry, there are none agreed upon.
Oh,
right?
Okay. Got it. Okay. So it's kind of just like you make what you want of it right now.
Yeah. Europe right now is doing a better job at kind of creating this foundation, but in the US, and especially when it comes to investors looking at investing in companies and what they should be looking at and the metrics that they should be looking at, there is no agreed upon framework. And Larry Fink last year came out and said that, you know, like they're making this a main focus, right? And so the question is, who determines this framework?
Wow.
And so we are even looking at having like a working group on, okay, so what would this framework look like, and who should decide what it is, right?
I mean, that's a huge conversation to have.
It's a gigantic, but it is one that needs to happen. And it can't happen only from the investment community, and it can't happen only from the business stakeholders, and it can't happen just from regulators, right?
Yes.
And it also shouldn't happen just from the top, you know, tier of, you know, business elite and investing elite, right? Like, it should happen with a startup investor and a startup, you know, CEO who will then have to implement this.
Yes. Right.
So it has to happen from all these different levels. And if we don't start bringing those people together, then it's not going to happen. And I believe, you know, that I call this democratizing the think tank space, because, you know, to be in a think tank, usually you have to have worked at, you know, the White House or the government level. And so we're with our editorial team, which has, you know, an incredible background, we're democratizing the think tank space.
I mean, that's huge. I love how you say that casually. And it's like, this is mind blowing how massive this is. And if you're part of the beta, so let's say someone's listening and they go to sign up for the beta, what can they expect is there an approval process? Do they automatically join? And then once they do join, what happens?
So there's an approval process. So you would go to our site, you would apply. We've made it not a cumbersome approval process, but we really want to make sure that people who are joining have demonstrated that they want to be a part of this community and that they also have the background to be a part of it. And by that, it's not onerous at all. Like, we don't want to be, it's curated. So we want to make sure that people who are going to join are engaged. But I mean, that said, you know, we've got even university students who are extremely interested in this, and they're going to be the next generation of leaders. So they should be a part of this, right?
Oh, that's cool. So it's really, truly like well-rounded. It's amazing to think a university student and like a Fortune 100 CEO, like in the same room, technically. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and again, it is curated with our editorial team. So like, you know, it's not just like it's not going to be like Reddit. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
And I love Reddit.
Why does this feel so much like Reddit? Yeah. Yeah.
Because, you know, we adhere to, we've got rules and guidelines that we adhere to. And we want to make sure that everything that is happening is at the level of a think tank that we respect. And like, that's what our advisors and leaderships expect. But
so when you're in it, what's happening? Like, how are people like called to participate, or are there more passive users? Like, what does that look like? Landscape look like?
We hope. So my goal right now is, we've created the site to be something that you can utilize that, respects your time. We don't want people spending, it's not a social media site. We don't want people spending hours at a time on it, unless they're in one of the working groups and they're doing like a working sprint. But the idea is that this could be something that you go on once or twice a week and you get the top and the most, you know, the most, recent information in systems change for tools and leadership and, like news with a breakdown. So every day we're posting, in our insight forums, the top news or an insight that we think that our leaders need to know.
Oh my God. That's incredible. So smart to have that. Yeah.
So that we're a resource for systems changers, right? It's not just, like I said, it's a community. So you get to engage with everybody within there. There are networking events, but we are a think tank. So therefore, we're pushing the knowledge that, you know, is out there. We're asking questions. We're engaging. So our editorial team scours the internet and the news for the most recent kind of insight. We post it with a breakdown, with the key takeaways, and also with a conversation starter, because we want to know. So like, hey, okay, this report just came out from Deloitte. Here's the key breakdown. And here's our main question. You know, like, can you actually implement this in your company? Right? And that's just an example. But yeah. And so then let's get into the nitty gritty of it. And then we'll have, you know, from that, let's just say we've got the, we just had a report come out that we're focusing on that was at the UN. Some of our community was a part of writing it. So what we would do is we would first highlight the report. Then we're going to bring in one of the writers of the report and do a one-on-one live Q&A session with them, right? And so that you could ask them questions as well. But this won't be long. We don't want to monopolize anyone's time. So it would be maybe a 15-minute live Q&A session with them.
But it all lives on the platform. So they don't have to ever – they sign in and then they get access to everything.
Exactly. Exactly. Amazing. So once you're a member, like that's – You get access to everything. You get access to all of our programs that are on demand.
Wow.
And then, you know, our events, and then as well as our exclusive reports.
I mean, this is a gold mine. It's crazy.
We worked really hard.
I have chills right
it.
Now. I'm like, oh my God. Because there's nothing like this out there at all. And so when you were thinking about starting something like this, when you were looking at the landscape, was it surprising to you to not see something like this already created?
No, because I guess as a journalist, I would have loved a resource like this to have gone to, and to be able to like in this space get this type of information, or even like to be a part of a network that I could tap into for anything. Mm-hmm. You know, so for example, one of the spaces that we have, and again, this is some of these things are like general to community spaces, but we've got a space for Ask and Offer, like most community spaces do, and so we have authors in our community who are writing books who can post. Hey, I need an interview with, you know, someone who specializes in transportation, right? And because of the network and because we focus truly on, you know, these sectors, it's easy to tap into and know that you're getting someone who also has been kind of vetted, right?
Yes. Yeah. That it's not just like anyone's in there. I'm like freaking out right now. I hope everyone that's listening is freaking out. I mean, this is so cool. It's so cool. Like there's nothing that I've ever seen like this.
It's the marriage of two really great concepts, community and think tank.
Yes, totally. And so for people listening, we have a lot of students listening, so I'm glad that you mentioned that. And then we have a lot of obviously like startup owners and founders. So what should they know if they're interested in applying? What should they know going into it to express what they need to communicate why they might be a good fit?
Well, one, we really want to know how we can help them. So like some of the most important things in the application process are really, what are you working on? Like, what are you excited about in systems change? Because that really helps us facilitate their needs, right? So if we see, because we're tracking a ton of people come in that are working in the healthcare space, right? We're gonna start tapping into that and looking more at, okay, systems change in healthcare, right? Mm. But that's for the application process. I don't think I answered your question properly.
No, it's okay. I mean, it's good to know. I mean, so like if someone were to apply, like
what should they
question about their skill set, or what should they affirm about their skill set that would help them get a leg up in getting in, I guess?
Really, it is just about that demonstrated interest or authority in one of the pillars of ESG or SDG goals, right? Like, you could be a high school, like Greta Thunberg, right?
We'll take her.
Yeah.
Right. But what?
But we'll vet
scale?
Her first.
Yeah. Can you imagine? She's like, wow, I'm waiting to hear back.
But like, we'll start what? That like, rumor.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Do you guys hear who's waiting in the queue right now? This is awesome. That's awesome. I love it.
Oh my God.
Like what scale should people be thinking about? Because I think too, a lot of people, of course, there's a lot of pride, right? With some people who are like starting sustainability initiatives and care about what's happening. But like what's the scale of how you're like identifying if someone's really doing what they, you know, what's something that's truly impactful that would be beneficial member of the community?
Definitely. That's a great question. And we've really gone over for months, we've talked about, okay, well, how do we do our acceptance guidelines? And so that's something that we've really worked on. And so let me say something that we definitely, we see and we don't allow. And this might answer it better.
Yeah, that's good.
because we have a strict, as we're doing our vetting, that one, people have to have demonstrated interest on social media in these areas, right? So if someone comes to us and they don't have any social media, and I hate to say that that's like social media something that we use, like LinkedIn is definitely something that we use. If there's like no track record of them having any interest in sustainability or ESG anywhere, then, you know, obviously this is not a fit. If they have demonstrated hostility or trolling or anything like that on social media, so like you could be a well-established person, but yet you seem extremely hostile in online community, you know, in sites. That is something that we don't tolerate. So hostility or kind of that harassment or antagonism online, right? I mean, and even if, and so like, let's just say you're a transformative figure in, you know, sustainability, but if you are antagonistic, that is not the type of, we are about cultivating cross collaboration and, you know, moving things forward. And that doesn't happen in an environment where you feel like you could, you know, it could be hostile.
Yes, and that happens so easily, I feel like, in this world where people jump to that like emotional response so quickly. Yeah. And that's such a good, I'm so happy you said that, because I think a lot of people think about cancel culture, right? And they think about things that are happening with brands, and it immediately like hardens them to the brand, and they call it out in a way that's almost like not helpful for the brand.
Yeah.
It's not serving the brand. So like, I think that's a really respectable piece of criteria, or, you know, something to vet someone against, because I think that that is common actually. So it really kind of like increases the type of caliber of person that you're looking for.
Because we are fostering a safe space, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And it should be something that you are coming to, and you're able to express opinions and even counter opinions in order to move this dialogue forward. Like, you should be saying, okay, so if we say, hey, oh, we think it's a great idea to do, I'm going to throw out like carbon tax, right? And someone goes, wait, but that's going to hurt this business, you know, this business or this, or they should be able to express that. And it should be a great debate and dialogue. I am just an advocate for debate and dialogue. It's the most important thing to have. And if you don't have that, then you actually don't have policies that represent everyone.
So important. I love it. You said that. That's so important. What advice do you have for entrepreneurs? What do you think entrepreneurs need to hear right now when it comes to sustainability? Yeah. Like,
Can you be more specific? Because
going into 2022 and the times that we're living in right now, for people that are starting brands or have new brands, which is a lot of the people listening to this podcast, what do you think they should know? Whether or not they have a sustainability, you know, arm or practice currently in their company?
You know, I feel like a lot of people have had such a tough few years. And that, you know, when you're looking at sustainability, it seems like something sustainability, and we talk about climate change, and they seem like they're so tough and so hard to tackle. So I think that the best advice I could have for someone is, if they believe that they have a great idea, to have patience and perseverance in pursuing it when it comes to sustainability. That when it comes to actual change, it is not something that's going to happen overnight. And your idea could take a while to catch on, because communicating things like that, especially if it isn't tech, is very difficult. So because it's a consumer mindset shift. And then it's also a lot of investors are, you know, like, I'd love to get more young investors involved in investing in companies, because there is a disconnect between who invests in companies and who, you know, buys from companies, and really like what could be a transformative company. So it's just, there's a system that needs to change.
Stop plugging your company. No, I'm kidding.
I know. but yeah, I mean, it is, when it comes to sustainability, it's you have to have a little bit more patience.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good response. I like that. And where can people find you personally? And then also, if they want to be a part of this beta, where should they go?
These days, I feel like I live on LinkedIn.
Yes, you do.
I live on LinkedIn. True. Sometimes I message on Instagram, but I live on LinkedIn.
That's also true. Like waiting in the wings. Yes. Yeah.
Well, I feel like with Instagram, it's like you've got to take a picture of yourself to say anything, and I just don't do that anymore. It's like
don't have time for that right now.
I know. Never wearing makeup or anything. So, on LinkedIn, you can find me personally. I think it's LinkedIn and then / Tamara Lane, and then our company is Systems Changer without the E. So Changer is changr.com.
Okay.
And yeah, just very excited. Honestly, if anyone's listening and wants more information, just DM me on LinkedIn.
Love it. And then can you just spell for people listening your first name?
Yes, Tamara, T-A-M-A-R-A. And my last name is Lane, L-A-I-N-E.
Perfect. I love it. Get ready for an influx of people. I think everyone's going to be listening to this and being like, oh my God, this is so cool. Yeah. And do you expect also one other thing? I know that we talked about the U.S., specifically, but we have obviously like your podcast. We should talk about your podcast and plug that, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
But can people apply from around the world? Like, is it internationally? Oh,
we're
perfect.
Global. We're cool. Global. And our team is global as well.
Oh, that's great. I love that. Okay, great. And then let's talk about your podcast super quickly.
Yes. And so my podcast, I'm so proud of it. As a new mom, I started a podcast called Mind the Ceiling, which I interview just trailblazing women who are shattering ceilings. It's so much fun. We've done 2 seasons this year where I've interviewed 8 incredible women, and we talk about their journey to shattering a glass ceiling. I've interviewed, you know, everyone from, or not everyone, I've 16 women, but incredible women.
A lot of people.
But I've interviewed the former president of the ACLU. I've interviewed, so Lauren Bonner, who will be coming out. She's season 2, our second episode, she was the Me Too of Wall Street, just an absolute courageous inspiration who stood up for pay equality in investment banking, and incredible stories of basically like where these women kind of got their inspiration, their courage to pursue their dreams. And then while doing that, also shattering barriers for others to come. So they're inspiring stories. I learned so much for them, but I'll be honest. I started the podcast to outsource my parenting, to find out how to raise a fearless woman.
Get out of here. That's so funny. I did not know that. That's so awesome.
I've got just this incredible 3-year-old who, you know, she's audacious, and I hope that she rules the world one day. And so I have to be the person who gives her that guidance. And I want to talk to other women.
Yeah, exactly. Selfishly, I mean, it's amazing. Okay. Yeah. Thank you so much. This was great. We'll include all that in the show notes, and thanks for coming on. So excited for you.
Oh my gosh. Thank you for having me on. This was so much fun.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to keep this outro short because I just listened to the intro and I'm like, I talk so much sometimes. Please, no one write a negative review about how much I talk. I swear to God, I'm not trying to. Sometimes I just get really, really excited and I like can't help myself. So thank you so much, Tamara, for coming in the podcast. I adore you. You know that. And I'm just so excited for you and all of this positive momentum that you have going on. It's just really, really, really exciting. So if you guys love today's episode, please let me know. If you had something that really stuck out to you that you'd like to learn more about, also let me know. Tamara was so generous to include her personal channels. So if you have questions for her or you're curious about something that she talked about, like ask her questions. My dog's snoring in the background. I apologize if the mic is picking up on that, but thank you so much for listening, and congrats, Tamara, for launching something that's truly game-changing, like world-changing. It's so cool to have you on the podcast. I'm just so freaking pumped for you. Thanks so much, you guys, for listening. Grateful for you, and I will catch you in next week's episode. Have a good one.